Welcome to the MEP podcast, where I'll be exploring the intersection of sport and spirituality through a variety of practices that ultimately invite us to learn, grow, and connect. I believe that through movement and mindfulness, we can create an awareness within that will allow us to integrate as individuals and connect more deeply to our mind, body, and spirit, together navigating a way to the way. This episode is supported by Holos. Now, I've been enjoying this product for the last year or so, and it's an overnight muesli with a blend of organic whole grains, nuts, seeds, and dry fruit, and packs 20 grams of plant-based protein and 380 calories of nutrient-dense, delicious, organic fuel. Whether it's for breakfast or on the road, Holos provides an awesome, easy option to fuel big workouts or an easy meal. My favorite flavors are peanuts and maple and vanilla, and I like to top it off with honey, cacao nibs, or nut butter when I'm at home. It comes in a reusable jar, and all you do is add your choice of milk. The packaging also is recyclable too, which is nice. Right now, you can use the code MEP10 and get $10 off your first order at liveholos.com. On this episode of the podcast, I sit down with Rob Smith and Nick Lowe. They both happen to be partners in Vancouver Run Company, and they are launching a new brand called Raya, or Run As You Are, which we dive into what that looks like, how running and NFTs in the future of the digital landscape are looking at connecting one another, creating community of diversity, inclusion, and inspiring people to move and live in a more healthy way. We dive into both Nick and Rob's journeys into the space and the run shop and what brought them here and what they were hoping to create and some of the challenges along the way. And by the end of this, I had a much better idea of what Run As You Are is going to be, how it's going to positively help and affect the run communities around the world. And also felt just more inspired by hearing Rob and Nick both share their own journeys and curiosities and where they have blind spots and how they help to accent each other and inspire one another to move forward and take a risk and dive into this sort of uncharted territory, which is always incredible and scary and exciting and all at the same time. So I hope you enjoy this episode. All right. Welcome, Rob and Nick. Excited to dive in with you guys, talk about all things running, digital worlds, and the community that you're hoping to create and already creating with Vancouver Run Co. and Nick as well, I guess, with Myo Detox up in Canada and Vancouver. And I think for me and for everyone listening, it'd be great to get a little bit of context from each of you in terms of how you got to where you are today, in terms of what's going on, maybe some running background in terms of, is it performance? Is it like just general health? You know, any kind of like goals or key moments on that front that have helped like shape your perspective on running? And yeah, what kind of inspired you to start these companies and bring people together and inspire people to move their bodies? Maybe Rob, you can go first.
Yeah. My name's Rob Smith. I'm one of the co-owners of Vancouver Running Company. We've been in business for nearly 8 years now. And my running journey started, I was around 11 years old. I was kind of trying to figure this one out, but I started running because my dad had taken up running really just for health reasons. He was a paramedic at the time, and he was starting to take a lot of guys his age to the hospital for having heart attacks. So it was a bit of a light bulb moment for him. So he wanted to get a bit more healthy and start running. And we lived in kind of your typical sort of small BC town with a lot of sort of neighborhoods you could putz around in. So I would just tag along with them on runs as long as I could. And then I would head back home. And I think just that natural, I think it was just a bit of a natural gift kind of thing. I always joked that I was sort of that annoying kid that would chatter away while we were running, and my dad was huffing and puffing. And then it just became second nature, just something that I did throughout my teens, my 20s. I ran track for a little bit in high school. And then in my 20s, kind of, you know, used it as a bit of a sidelines thing. I would run here and there. But then as I became like early 30s, and then we have eventually started a family, I've started to really run a lot more. And running for me became a lot more of a mental health tool, as much as it was a physical tool. And then sort of fast forward, and I had worked in digital marketing for quite some time. I was a marketing manager for a software company for a long time. And we've just always wanted to open our own business and really saw a gap in the running world in terms of how community was represented, how it was supported at the retail level, especially. And then really saw a need for retail's evolution. So I often say that running retail was really kind of set up in the 80s and 90s when running really had a boom, and then it was kind of forgotten. And there was no real sort of aesthetic update, style update. There was no sort of nod to running culture anymore. And so Vancouver Running Company was born out of that. And then really over the first few years, we really built up that business and built up the community and really let the community kind of drive and shape who we were. And I met Nick really, really early on. In fact, it was weeks after we opened the doors when he was at what was then Physio Room prior to Myo Detox. And they were looking for a partner that was very like-minded. And we kind of came on Nick's radar and his team's radar. And we've always partnered just in the community, doing different community activations, supporting the running community. And eventually Nick came on as a partner. And here we are now diving into software and all things Web3 and how they're going to help build the running community and take it really through its next evolution.
Yeah, great. Well, I have some follow-up questions, but let's hear about Nick first.
Yeah. So my name's Nick Lowe. From Vancouver, born in Vancouver, BC, and been in Vancouver my whole life. And I guess I'll start with my running journey. It's started a lot later than Rob. I primarily was a basketball player growing up. That's what I loved. And basketball was like such a, like my part of my identity, I guess, growing up, and just being a part of teams and having that competition in school, and being able to, like, you know, play sports and sweat and, you know, be healthy and active was kind of always just a big part of my life. And then I'd say after kind of university, when I went to physio school and all of that, things changed quite a bit, primarily because it's just way harder to get a group of friends together to go shoot hoops. Going to need at least another friend, but preferably 9 other friends to play a full court game. So in order to, you know, sweat and still have that level of competition, I picked up working out, just going to the gym. But pretty quickly, I missed just kind of moving my feet a lot. So I started running. This was in 2014, 2013, something around those years. And just like I think everybody who starts, didn't really, I think of myself as a runner. I just wanted to sweat and exercise and do something by myself. And, you know, first thing I ran, I think, was the Sun Run, and I thought I was not going to make it. 10 kilometers is really far for somebody who plays basketball. We do a couple lines and it's pretty much it. We're shooting hoops. So yeah, from doing the first Sun Run to, you know, ended up doing a bunch of halves and a couple full marathons in 2015 and 2016. Haven't done any since, partly because it was really like strenuous on my physical body to do all of that stuff. Much like Rob, I think I transitioned a lot to using running very much as like a meditative routine. I do it every single morning, pretty much every day now, just to clear my head. Been an entrepreneur my whole life, so it's good to have a little bit of time to create a bit of space for yourself. So I spend every morning just going for a small little walk, and then I start jogging and running. And hopefully, to me, it's like a way to stimulate new thought. It's the only time that, you know, you're not kind of fed information, whether it's through Zooms or podcasting or through social media or what have you. So it's together with coffee is like the perfect mix of like, it's like the cocktail I need to kind of get my day started. So the running journey is that, from a kind of, how did I get here from a career perspective? Rob mentioned it a little bit in his intro, but My background is actually in physiotherapy. I'm a physiotherapist since 2006, so for a long time. And then I started my practice in 2011 called Physio Room in Vancouver. And 2015, I met Rob, again, just a few weeks after he opened. The story really is I'm kind of a sneakerhead in some ways. Always, basketball players are always sneakerheads. We collected sneakers growing up, loved the culture. I was Googling sneaker stores in Vancouver just for fun. And a Vancouver running company for some reason kind of popped up. And I looked at it. I looked at the aesthetic of the store, and it was nothing. I've never seen anything like that before, not from a running store perspective. Specifically, I was running at that time. That was kind of when I was training for marathons, and I was going to kind of your more traditional running stores at that time. And this was like this weird blend of like culture, sneaker, kind of cool vibes, and running at the same time. So I just randomly cold emailed Rob out of the blue, and I was like, I love your store. I think it's cool. You know, I'm looking for partners in the run space. Which we had trouble finding. So from a physio room perspective, we were always looking for run partners because we treated a lot of runners in our space, but we always had trouble finding a brand, I guess, that fit the aesthetic of what we were trying to build until Vancouver Running Company. So we obviously connected right away, started doing a ton of events together, 2016, 2017. I transitioned to Myo Detox in 2017. So I met some of the guys over in Toronto. I know Vinny's been on this podcast as well. So Vinny obviously being one of them, and Scott as well, 2017. And then, you know, we kind of just set out on a mission to join forces and kind of be the cool rehab company, rehab brand across the world. And 2017 to 2021, my main focus was helping with operations and leading kind of the strategy around scaling the business towards to the States. Expanded a ton in Vancouver. We flipped all our physio rooms to Myo Detoxes. Opened, you know, I think we have 6 clinics in Vancouver now. There's 4 in Toronto and the 3 in LA, so 13 clinics total. I stepped away from it in 2021. Almost at the same time that became a partner at Vancouver Running Company with Rob and Becky as well. And, you know, it was this weird, you know, I had a kid and there was a lot of traveling with Myo Detox, tons of traveling. I loved it. Like, and I, you know, still friends with everybody there, of course. I still work there to some degree as an advisor. But the travel kind of stressful life, just it, you know, it's for younger people. Like I was getting a little older and I very much wanted to still be in business and be an entrepreneur and, you know, solve new problems. But I wanted to do it in a less kind of travel every month to another city type of way. So I was really into running, loved what Rob and Becky were building at Vancouver Running Company. So decided that was going to be the next part of my journey I'm going to go into this running world. And, you know, I have a lot of experience in scaling businesses and looking at brick and mortar spaces specifically, not in retail, of course, and not in the run industry specifically, but, you know, business and, you know, building communities and, you know, these things are applicable to me across all industries. Right. So, I really wanted to take on the challenge and 2021. So it's been about 18 months since I've been a partner at Vancouver Running Company. And for about a year now, we've been working on this new company called Run As You Are, which I'm sure we'll dive into.
Yeah, for sure. No, thanks for sharing all that. That's great. I'm curious, like, you know, you went to school and became a physiotherapist. And it sounds like what you're doing now is a little bit of a, you know, stretch from that. You know, my feeling from like getting to know you a little bit the last couple of weeks is that you're like hungry for learning, hungry for growing, and there's like a constant sort of like evolution. So I'm curious like how that journey has been, like when you got into running, Were you immediately like integrating stuff you'd learned from physiotherapy and your practice there into your own practices? And like you mentioned, it's obviously, it is hard on your body, right? And, you know, I was laughing when you mentioned like playing basketball and then running a 10K, because the first race I ever did was a half marathon. My girlfriend kind of signed us up for it at the time. And I figured, well, I'm playing soccer all the time. Like, I can do this, right? And it was a seriously rude awakening to what running for that amount of time does to the body and without any stopping and starting like there is on the court or the field. But yeah, just kind of like that evolution for you from like physiotherapist, which is like, you know, could be hands-on one-to-one forever. And you could become like great at that. But you've obviously gone to building these spaces, building community, learning technology, like this constant kind of like evolution and growth way beyond like what a typical physiotherapist would do. Like, is that all self-learned and taught?
Yes. So I think I've always been just a curious mind. I like to think I'm more of a creative type of entrepreneur. And again, physiotherapy opened a lot of doors for me. It's the initial reason I wanted to go into physiotherapy was actually to, my dream was to work for the LA Lakers because I was a basketball player. So, wanted to treat the highest level, you know, of athletics possible. And that, again, when I started, that was my dream. And when I continued on, I realized that one of the biggest things that I can do is, I had a background with my parents because they were entrepreneurs. Growing up, I worked in a lot of the businesses that they started. And I had this curiosity around opening more clinics and opening more stores and then being able to train other individuals to impact more people. And I guess like early on, I realized that it was something I was super passionate about and also something I was probably strong in, is being able to help other people kind of see that vision of reaching kind of newer heights. So I switched from like wanting to basically be a self-therapist for the LA Lakers and decided to open clinics instead. And when MyoDetox came in the picture, it was like the catalyst that I needed, because it really felt like you're kind of in an echo chamber. You know, I'm like whiteboarding by myself. Like there's nobody watching or adding like any input, but that's kind of how you feel as a solo entrepreneur at times. And then when I met Vinny and Scott, it was like, wow, how did we never meet before? Like, you had these two people that were all like, they were inspiring to me and they still are inspiring to me. They wanted to, like, you know, lack of better words, change the world, right? They wanted to change the world and for the rehab world. And I was like, wow, like I have to be a part of this. And at that time, you have to keep like, remember, Physio Room was quite successful. We had two clinics moving on to our third clinic at that time. We had a big team, 30, 40 people. And to just say, hey, we're going to go switch and change our names to MyoDetox because we want to be a part of something bigger than ourselves. That was a very, very tough decision for sure. But again, I'm one of those guys that's just if I see something and it stimulates this, like I can't stop thinking about it, because that's exactly what happened. I met with Scott and Vin in Toronto. I still remember it was the All-Star game, and it was Kobe Bryant's last All-Star game. He's my favorite player. So I went there just to watch that. I met these guys for just lunch. And then on the flight home, I already made the decision that I'm going to be part of MyoDetox. I didn't talk to anybody. It ended up being like a 1-year process to get there, but it was like an instant, this is what I'm going to do, because I need to dive in. And it might be successful, it might fail, but it's going to be very fun and I'm going to learn a ton. And that's what I wanted. And again, like when you do these kind of things, or physio for a while, or you open clinics, at some point it starts to feel like you're doing the same thing over and over again, and you're no longer stimulated to or excited or waking up in the morning going, wow, this is exact, you know, I feel like I'm really impacting the most that I can possibly impact. So I would say that, and then, you know, and partly why I left or decided to step down from MyoDetox as well and get into the running world and then into software and technology. It sounds crazy, but not really. I think it's fun. I can't wait to learn more.
Yeah, that's great. I think, you know, it can sound crazy when it's like laid out in like three sentences, but obviously this is a journey of like, you know, 8 years or something like that. And, you know, each day is like a stone that's part of that building and evolution. But I mean, I can definitely see where you and Vin, I don't know, Scott, but like have this like fearless curiosity almost. So I can see how that would have aligned and been really exciting for all of you guys to do what you were doing and now what you're doing now. And so, yeah, it's really cool to hear and learn about. So Rob, I want to kind of bounce back over to you and talk about, you know, opening Vancouver Run Co. I guess like our timing would have kind of just missed because I pretty much left Vancouver at the very end of 2015. I think it was. Mm-hmm. And I ran the 2015 BMO marathon. That's the only marathon I've run, but I did it like I went and joined like the running rooms, you know, yeah, program on the, I think, what street was it?
It's probably Canby.
Yeah, exactly. And that was the first time I ever ran with a group of people. It was the first, you know, I don't think I ever bought anything there other than like some Honey Stingers gels because Nick, I grew up playing basketball and sneakers. So, you know, I was only buying the exact colorway of the Nike Flyknit racer that I had to have from probably somewhere outside of Vancouver. But yeah, so, you know, you had this vision of creating this running store. And on one hand, I'm like, obviously, right? Like, how is there not a running store that's like aesthetically considered, looks cool, something you want to go to, and is providing like an edited offering of cool running gear, right? Because it seems obvious, but still there's like barely a handful of these in the world, it seems like.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, like, as you decided to do that, I mean, that's a pretty big shift from marketing software. So, you know, was there fear around diving into this? Was it tough to get the brands you wanted straight away? And what was it like to start to build that community?
Yeah. So you're absolutely right. 2015, we would have been, when you ran that marathon, we would have been open for a month. So shortly thereafter, yeah, you left town and I guess we took over. yeah. I mean, honestly, looking back at it, it was frankly a bit idiotic. The market is and was saturated for running. I should actually preface as well as we actually had written two business plans. One was for a conceptual cycling shop, and the other was for really like a new school indie run shop. And we researched both at the same time. We had budgets. We hadn't written the cycling budget quite yet, but conceptually we had it. We had started that process. But what we realized really, really quickly was our concept wasn't going to work on the cycling side, namely because of government regulations, and we wanted like some craft breweries involved and things like that, and really make it sort of like a Belgian classic cyclocross sort of vibe to it. So it was just full of red flags, margins are really low, all that sort of stuff. I have deep respect for people in the cycling industry. Whereas, you know, we might be selling one pair of running shoes, they sell a bike with like 80 parts on it. So those are all things we kind of learned through that process, and we decided to scrap that. And at the same time, in parallel, we were doing a running business plan, and all of our research had really pointed to the fact that running just had not evolved. And at that time, Nick and I, we had talked about this before, but I was spending way too much money buying running clothing from soccer shops in the UK because aesthetically I liked the look of it a lot more than what I was seeing in North America and what I could purchase locally. So the actual concept of Anchor Running Company came from this very obvious gap that I wasn't being served as a running consumer. Running had really not evolved. And when I looked around at how running was engaging with the community, it was your clinics at the run shop. And that was it. That was full stop it. There was culture slowly bubbling up around like ultra marathons and things like that. But really on the roadside, there was no embracing, you know, that person that heads out and runs at 11 PM because they got off shift work, or, you know, there just wasn't that. And I grew up doing a lot of surfing and skiing. And I really always had that desire to create sort of that surf shop. And you know, arguably surf and skate started this, but that real surf shop sort of community vibe that just is synonymous with that side of life. And, you know, it doesn't really matter where you come from. There's probably a type of surfing that you identify with. If you're a surfer, there's probably a type of skateboarding that you identify with. And I would venture to guess you would never cross paths with anybody that says skateboarding doesn't have one of the strongest communities on the planet. And it's not, I don't think it's about the tricks and it's about this, it's about the camaraderie and that sort of thing. And there was just this clear gap. And so when we conceptualized Vancouver Running Company, it was really, that was the core of it, was how can we create an environment that really truly is a reflection of who we are? And so the very first conversation we ever had was with our friend, Amber Kingsnorth, who was the interior designer for the space. And the conversation was really, we went out for drinks and I verbally dumped everything that I thought a running shop should be aesthetically. And she made that. It was, I remember walking in and thinking to myself like, oh wow, you really truly took everything that was in my head and made it happen. And you know, why I say like in hindsight, it was a bit idiotic was the market was pretty saturated in Vancouver. It was so hard to get brands. Adidas, I still have just like so much respect for the team at Adidas. They were the only big brand that they actually were the only brand that asked to see our business plan. And they were the only brand that saw the vision with Flight Crew Run Club. So we had this tiny little section in our business plan that was like four paragraphs long, and it was called Flight Club. And they phoned me and were like, tell us about Flight Club. What is this? I said, well, you know, I noticed that like there's clinics, you can train for a marathon, you can train for 10K, you can do all those sorts of things. You can buy a plan online, you can subscribe to Runner's World and they'll tell you how to do a couch to 5K. There's no culture around it. And we want to harness the culture of running and who we are and create a community around that. And they were like, they flat out were like, this is amazing. Nobody's really thought about creating anything like that. At the time, like Parkdale Roadrunners had come on the scene, Black Roses, Run Dem Crew, like some real like influential running crews had started to come on the scene. And so I had kind of like loosely gotten wind of them, but once I really learned, like once I met Mike Kaprika at Parkdale and that sort of thing, I was like, oh, this, like, you know, this is becoming a culture. Like this is like a burgeoning culture within the planet, really. And Adidas saw that and they came on board. And honestly, we didn't get another big brand for like 2.5 years after that. it was a hard deal. And you know, I won't beat around the bush. It's like, it's a cold industry in Canada. Like there's a lot of people that are trying to shut you down. They don't want you here and they're not going to make it easy for you. And they will leverage their relationships or how much they purchase, really, for lack of a better term. And they will really try to make it you unsuccessful. So sometimes if I'm having a down day, I think to the fact that, you know, we're almost 8 years old and, you know, we survived that. And I think it's, you know, I'm not an ego driven person, but I sometimes reflect on that and think like we made it through some serious mud. And we're coming out the other side and we're actually now helping shape the industry, and brands lean on us to really help pioneer the industry. So that's, you know, when I look back and I think, you know, shit, would I ever recommend anybody do this? It would be a hard no. But now that we're here, I often, you know, and Nick's on board and we have a really strong, clear vision for Vancouver Run & Company and Run As You Are, I just feel like I couldn't be in a better place. And Vancouver Run & Company, you know, no qualms about it, it's a challenge. Our brick and mortar location needs to be relocated. We've outgrown the space. Our location was already challenging. It's up some stairs. So, you know, we've always had our work cut out for us, but we've built a really strong brand despite all those things. And so, yeah, I really don't think we could be in a better place right now. So,
yeah, that's cool to hear. And like a bummer here too, that like, you know, other shops want to shut you down and like, don't want you to get these accounts. And I guess like I was involved in more of like the sneaker shop world. And it was similar in that sense too, where it's like, we're going to buy 20% more. Don't even open them, you know, and that it's unfortunate. But yeah, it's great that you were able to get Adidas on board and have them believe in what you're doing. I don't feel like they were making anything very interesting at the time.
No. And you know, the only reason I really went after them was at the time I was kind of tail end of doing Olympic distance triathlon and I would run in the Adios all the time. And so I just naturally was like, oh, we should have Adidas in the shop. And I think where it was attractive for them is they were all also going through a sort of change and growth period and they were introducing new technologies like Boost. Boost came out the year we opened. And I remember having a conversation because Boost at the time when the Ultra Boost came out, it was $250 Canadian. And our rep, Devin Delaney, phoned me up one day and he said, hey, we've got the shoe coming out and we're going to market it as the greatest running shoe ever. And I was like, sick, what is it? Like, greatest running shoe ever? Are you kidding? Okay, what is it? It's like, it's $250. And me being naive and not really, you know, also had a love for sneakers. I was like, $250, like, you know, that's not even the drop in the bucket for a desirable pair of lifestyle sneakers. So I bought our entire allocation and it sold out instantly. And I was, you know, in hindsight, from purely a business perspective, it was totally unsustainable. You can't like base your growth off these crazy spikes in sales and stuff. But as a new business, I was like, oh my gosh, we're like, we hit the gold mine. And then for like 12 months, every time the Ultra Boost came out, we were the only shop bringing it in because nobody liked all the other old school run shops were scared of the price point. And then when the Ultra Boost got saturated and, you know, arguably wasn't really a running shoe per se anymore, I was hearing stories of all these old school run shops, like sitting on way too much inventory and things like that. And that was one of the key moments where I thought like, oh, you know, maybe we are kind of pioneering. Maybe we are sort of forward thinking in this industry. Cause I wasn't thinking about price point. I was thinking about new technology and the fact the shoe looked rad and people were buying for running. So we've always kind of had that mindset where it's like, yeah, this might look scary, but let's really like cut it down. Like, you know, does it make sense for the business? Does it make sense for the team? That sort of thing. And let's go. And that's how Run As You, that's how I came on board with Run As You Are. I remember sitting having a conversation with Nick and I was like, my head was spinning on him. Like, what are you talking about? But then he talked about the utility of web tokens, of digital tokens. And that was like a massive unlock for me. It's like the same unlock I got in accounting in university. One day I was just like a beautiful mind. I'm like, oh my gosh, you're right. This is like the amount of things we can do is insane. So we've just always had that mindset. So yeah, I mean, at the time, Adidas might not have been firing on all cylinders, but there was just, I had an affinity for the brand and they believed in what we were doing. So it wasn't so much about the products, it was about the people.
Yeah, no, that's super cool. And that's, I love the story about the shoes as well and that whole process because yeah, it is like, you know, coming to an industry without being like totally conditioned by the traditions of it, like allows you some freedom sometimes, right? To be like, oh, 250, like no big deal. Like, let's do it, you know? Whereas, yeah. You know, if you've been doing that your entire life and grew up in that store and it's like, no way a shoe can cost more than $150. That's insane, yeah. Right. And like, so yeah, that's cool. I like that story as well. You know, just before we get into, you know, Raya and like really a big like digital push on multiple levels, I'm curious with Vancouver Run Co. I mean, even the name is like hyper local, right? But you obviously sell stuff online. And how is that process in terms of like trying to communicate what you're doing in the store, design-wise, community-wise, through website, social media. You know, do you find that challenging? Like, because I guess I imagine it's a lot richer in IRL experience, I guess.
Yeah, it is because of the human interaction. I think and that's always going to be a challenge for anybody, is how do you replicate human interaction online? I mean, we can do it right now. We can have a great conversation, but you know, we can't high five at the end. We can't, you know, so there's going to be an automatic sort of, not loss of connection, but you're not going to connect as well. So we took it more from a brand perspective. If you look at the website, in particular, the way a pair of shoes appears on the website, they're displayed the exact same way with the exact same icons, with the exact same write-up in store. So I always use that as a bit of a marker, like making sure that wherever somebody saw us first, whether it was online or in store or on Instagram, that there was a complete holistic sort of like brand presentation. And it was, you know, Nick is... said it a million times. It's not about the price or the products or anything like that. It's about whether people identify with the brand, which is, it's very simple in its delivery, but it is just so true. It's just, if you, I have another saying that everything you put out in this world is a direct reflection of yourself. And the product presentation and the website is a direct reflection of who we are. So we're not trying to be something that we're not. It is, so I think, naturally, the e-commerce side of it was a case of, I came from digital marketing, you know, there, I had an SEO background, that sort of thing. And so when we opened the business, the website was of course going to happen. It wasn't, we weren't not going to sell anything online. That wouldn't be a complete business. What I learned thereafter was that nobody had a website in the running world. There was, you know, some big shops in the US, could sort of like warehouse driven stuff. But like, that was it. Nobody was selling shoes online. So, you know, it was really just another sales channel for us, I guess, for lack of a better term. But over time, we've really built up that customer experience on that side of things. And there's only been one time where I've ever thought, did we choose the wrong name? Just, was Baker Running Company a bad call? Nick and I have talked about this 1,000 times. My wife, Becky, who's a partner, we talked about this 1,000 times. And I keep going back to the fact that, no, we didn't, because we're not, it's not Vancouver Running Company that makes a difference. It's the people, it's the product presentation, it's how we show up digitally. That's what makes a difference. And we are lucky in the sense that Vancouver has a certain cachet around the world. You know, we have a huge community from Hong Kong. We have a huge, you know, Persian community. There's reasons people like to come to Vancouver. There's reasons people desire to come to Vancouver. There's reasons the real estate's so expensive. And so Vancouver has a little bit of that, you know, that sort of clout, I guess you could say. And so, you know, we've bounced around different ideas around changing the name and things like that. But really, for me, it doesn't come down to the name anymore. It comes down to who we are and how we present ourselves. And I do believe that now we're at a point where we never have to worry about changing the name, that it is what it is. And, you know, it's like, there's lots of brands out there where you really think about the name, you're like, wow, that's an odd name for a company. But it's not about that name anymore. It's really about that, the people that identify with, the people that are behind it. So,
yeah, totally. That makes sense. I'm curious, like over my career, whenever I would go to a city, I would be like, what's the cool shop? What's the sneaker shop? What's the like clothing shop I want to go see? Now, if I feel like if I was going to do that now, I would find the running shop, you know?
So yeah.
It's like, is that something you experience where people come from different cities and they're like, you know, make a point of coming and checking out your shop? And then part two is like, do you notice, do people buy stuff that says like Vancouver Running Co, like, and they live in New York or Texas or something or somewhere else, like maybe in Europe even? It's like kind of interesting to think of like somebody on the other side of the world who's maybe never even been to Vancouver, like kind of repping the store in the city in that way.
Yeah. Yeah. We, the first answer is yeah. Yes. 100%. We get countless people that come into the store that want to experience the store when they're in town. And that is also, it's such a strong community running, and it really has become exponentially stronger in the past sort of 3-4 years. And so there's a lot of like, hey, my friend was in Vancouver and told me to come check out the shop. I wanted to check it out. And it's a lot of relationships in amongst the retail team and myself have been built because people have taken the time to come meet us, like not just come into the store and, you know, do a lap and leave, but like reach out and meet us. You know, I had my last really great conversation as I happened to be in there a few weeks back, and Pablo from Meta and some of the crew from Drumo had a friend up, and he made a point of coming, and, you know, we spent probably an hour and a half just chatting about running, and those relationships are just, that's how they start, you know. And we could fly down to Mexico City and hang out with him for probably a week now because we had those conversations, and that happens a lot. And then, yeah, I remember somebody sending me a picture. There was somebody running in Portugal that had a Vancouver Running Co. top. I had no idea who they were or anything. They shot a picture of it. And I remember that was the first time where exactly to your point, I was like, oh my God, there's people that like our brand. There's people that, you know, own our stuff and run around the world. And the first time we shipped something was, I remember it was to London. And same sort of reaction. I was just like, how did somebody find this? This is wild. Like somebody wants to wear our stuff there. And then I remember they emailed us and were like, oh, you know, I used to live in Canada and I want to rep, you know, I want to rep my old hometown and this kind of thing. And now it's like, we get a collection of VRC branded stuff, which as a side, like we take a lot of care and attention in curating and just creating those items. And a solid 40-50% of them go in the mail all over North America and all over the world. So for us, you know, you can use that as just as much as a, like, what's our reach type, you know, tool, all the way to, this is a really cool indication that the running community is actually global.
Yeah. Super cool. You guys met, became partners, and then Nick got super interested in Web3 and
yes, I did.
Somehow from there, this concept of Run As You Are or Riot was born. So I'm curious, Nick, I guess to hear a little bit about the path that brought you to this idea and, you know, some of the elements of the technology mixed with the sort of idea of community and what that looks like.
Yeah, it's been quite the year, I would say, in terms of Web3, NFT, cryptocurrency, all of that stuff. I am always fascinated, I guess, you know, being a curious entrepreneur. Why consumers gravitate towards things, and NFTs became probably the most searched term in 2021 on Google, and everybody was kind of talking about it. It was this buzzword that was coming out, and this was really right after I joined Vancouver Running Company, probably immediately after. Yeah, it was all over the place. The first interaction I had with Fit was a platform called NBA Top Shots. And again, basketball player. I also grew up collecting basketball cards. That world just kind of made sense to me. I decided to start buying some of these digital collectibles. I had no idea they were NFTs at that time. They were just fun. You would just buy these packs of cards and open the packs of cards, and you had no idea what would come out of those cards. I'm a fan of certain players, so I would want those players. So me and a group of friends, basketball friends, would be buying these packs of cards and actually opening the packs up together. Kind of like when we were young, but when we were young, we would do it in our parents' basement. Now we would do it in a bar on a computer. So it's a little bit different, but the concept was the same. There was still a level of excitement, like, what'd you get? Let's check it out, you know. So that whole thing was very fun. And then I started, of course, exploring what I was actually buying, because there was so much craze around that technology. Did a lot of research, found out they were NFTs, which is really a digital token minted on the blockchain. This has now to do with cryptocurrency and this idea of Web3. fast forward to about April, May, me and my friend, who's also one of our partners at in Run As You Are, his name is Larry, bought our first real kind of Ethereum-based NFT at the time. And it was a NFT that was launched by Gary Vaynerchuk, who's a big entrepreneur, kind of investor, also motivational speaker in the world. So he had talked about this idea that community can be built differently, that with digital tokens, you can interact and engage with your community in ways you can't without the digital token. So naturally, I was still in my detox at that time. One of my primary responsibilities at my detox was actually community building. So I naturally gravitated towards that. I was always trying to look at emerging trends in marketing and brand and community and all those kind of things. And when Gary Vaynerchuk launched his NFT, I had no idea how to purchase one, because the gap between how we interact with the web today and digital experiences to Web3 experiences is significant. You have to download a wallet. You have to have cryptocurrency. You have to transfer it into your wallet. And then now with that cryptocurrency, you go mint or purchase one of these NFTs. You know, a lot of signing of contract. Like it's very confusing and doesn't feel safe. Like the whole process is super clunky. So even though I knew about it and I was very familiar with it, it wasn't until Gary Vaynerchuk that kind of made me do it, right? Because he's quite a big influencer, I guess, in social media, Instagram, Twitter, all of that. And you know, I followed him and I listened to some of his things. And to me, he really kind of gave me, number one, he spent a lot of time educating people on it. He wrote blogs and blogs and blogs. He kept going on, Instagram Live and Twitter Spaces to talk about the technology and teaching people how to do it. So I felt relatively safe because, you know, there's this guy that's, you know, clearly successful in the kind of Web 2 world, let's say. And for somebody like that to kind of put his name, his personal brand, and all of everything he's ever worked for, almost like kind of like on the line, telling people to go buy NFTs, I was like, wow, this is actually kind of crazy. And Gary has this reputation of like being early in things. So I told my friend Larry, we need to dive in. Like, we can't just sit on the sideline for this one and watch. We really want to understand consumer behaviors and why people are so, interested in this stuff. Let's just go buy these things, right? And then let's go through the experience. Let's see how, Gary engages with us. Is it different? Do I get to talk to Gary? How does this work? So we did. Me and my friend Larry bought a handful of these. They were called V-Friends. And then after that, again, still super early days, we started to see, because Gary would talk about it, all the time, and what the NFT was for was it was a ticket to a future conference that he would throw. The conference is called VCon, and this was your ticket. The NFT itself was your ticket. So there was this like very interesting new way to basically interact with commerce now, because instead of buying a regular ticket, now you have an NFT ticket. And then what's the difference? The main difference is the ability to transfer ownership of that ticket. And if that ticket continually gives you access to this conference, let's just say it gives you access to this conference for years, then technically the value will be accrued in this ticket if the conference was great, right? If the first conference was amazing and everyone wanted to go, but there's only like 10,000 of these tickets that are available to the world, well, then technically the second conference, there's going to be a lot of excitement and demand for that ticket. And the original ticket holders now technically can transfer that ownership, meaning because they were part of that journey, that value that is accrued within that ticket, they can transfer that, sell it, gift it, whatever they want, right? So that to me was the fascinating part of NFTs. That was last summer though, right? again, we fast forward a little bit to like me and Larry just got really deep in this space, watched every YouTube video we possibly can, and just learned as much as we could about the space and bought and sold and got involved with Discords and all of that stuff. Just to, we're those types that just have to be in the thick of it to understand it. We just have to engage with it. So we did. Rob and the team at Vancouver Running Company, we started talking about this campaign project, you know, called Run As You Are. And the original, like when we first talked about it, it was actually just a t-shirt campaign. It was completely just a t-shirt campaign. We wanted to make, you know, create this artwork and have one of our friends, who's now one of our partners as well at Run As You Are, Marlon Soriano, who's the artist behind Run As You Are, to draw a bunch of characters with different backgrounds, different colors, different, just like fun things to make it like representative of a very diverse community. And we would print these characters on t-shirts. And we were actually at that time talking about buying a printing press, actually just printing as part of the campaign so that everyone would have kind of like a different character on their t-shirt so they can show up, right, at the runs the way they want to be identified, right? That kind of makes sense. You know, are you a parent runner? Are you a road runner? Are you a trail runner? Are you a, you know, all these different types of characters that Marlon can portray through art. So in parallel, you know, we were doing this t-shirt campaign. Marlon was doing the artwork for it, and I was fascinated with NFTs and Web3. So this was probably July, I think it was July last year, when the art kind of came out, the sketches, the first drafts of the art. I was so deep in this NFT Web3 world at this point. I was like, wait a second. This could be something more than just a t-shirt campaign. We can create digital collectibles now together with this, right? So we went down this path of let's create an NFT project, same messaging, right? Run As You Are, you know, all around diversity, inclusion, equity, that stuff. And we would, you know, launch it as a digital collectible now. And within this digital collectible, we would take kind of like Gary's original, like how he did it, which is, you know, you purchase one of these things and then it would unlock utility down the road, right? Maybe we can throw conferences, maybe we could throw events, maybe we can, you know, have products, all this kind of stuff. So me and Rob set out on this journey to basically talk to every brand that is really available, running brands, pretty much all of them that we talked to at Vancouver Running Company, and really not thinking like that hard about how challenging this space would be to navigate. And we started that probably end of 2021. Hard work was pretty much done at that time. And we started talking to brands, and that was probably the most difficult thing ever, because again, the original idea around the brands was, well, that wouldn't it be cool if the artwork had shoes that were, you know, kind of official shoes from Adidas or Nike or, you know, all the kind of run shoe brands, and then the apparel would be the apparel brands, and then we can create an NFT collection where now there's like actually officially licensed shoes and apparel within the collection as well. That was, we just went in thinking about that. We didn't think too hard about this idea that, you know, it's like borderless and it's like the Canada team or the US team or the global team. And you know, corporate structure gets very complicated very fast, and teams are very complicated very fast. So yeah, I guess we were a little naive and we didn't quite understand, you know, the path we were going down. You know, months and months and months and months and months kind of passed, and at the same time, the NFT consumer market had shifted a lot, and has continued to shift a lot. And really, like that initial kind of hype around buying NFTs and flipping NFTs and all of that really changed. This was, you know, April, May, June time of this year, continuing on to now. Of course, we're kind of heading into this recession type of period globally as well. So there's a lot happening from a macro level that's going to affect consumer behavior on all levels, right? So in kind of, I guess, May-ish, June, we had shifted Run As You Are to a different type of project altogether. And the Web3 NFT element is in there, but we decided, you know, we're not going to sell a bunch of NFTs and then, you know, you hold on to this thing and, you know, like utility will be unlocked as you go. That was the kind of way, the NFT way for a long time. This like roadmap and, you know, just kind of hold it and, you know, over time things will happen type of thing. We decided to, you know what, like the on the other side of the NFT, like who we really want on that other side is a runner and not a speculative investor. And it's very important that the ethos of what we're trying to build, which is around community, is there. So if our target market is just runners and has nothing to do with NFTs, how do we build something for them? So we set out kind of, again, on a new mission now. This is like phase three. Went from a t-shirt campaign to an NFT project to now, okay, we're just building a running company. It's a new running company. And we want runners to be able to engage with this stuff. So now we're building a effectively a software platform that has nothing to do with the NFT at first at all. You don't need to know blockchain. You don't need to know Web3, NFTs, cryptocurrency, any of that stuff. It's a completely free platform to join. And the idea, again, like if inclusivity is at the kind of everything about this project, we need to make it accessible to everybody in the world as well. So this is a completely free platform to use. There will be kind of the membership NFT offering, but you do not need to know anything about wallets, cryptocurrency, or NFTs. It's really just a membership for this platform. And I would say it's a premium membership. So everything the free platform gives you, the premium membership just gives you a slightly elevated experience throughout. And we would weave kind of this NFT stuff into it as I would say the rest of the world starts to adopt the technology and more tools exist. But we're in the position now that this is probably closer to Web 2 than Web 3. I always tell people it's Web 2.1, like we're going 2.1 right now, and then we'll go 2.2, then 2.3, 2.4. We'll trickle up to Web 3 as the world starts to evolve into that. That's where we are. Did I miss anything, Rob?
No, I mean, like, honestly, the probably the naivety thing was like spot on. Nick and I started brand conversations 9 months ago. And really, that was probably the biggest. I think that was not only the thing we realized was it was extremely difficult to convey what we were trying to do to people that were at the top of the food chain of these major sportswear companies. And I think that was one thing where I was like, wow, really? There's a lot of people that aren't even, not only do they not know what Web3 or NFTs are, but these brands weren't even really entertaining the idea, which was really, really interesting to me. But I think in having those conversations, it only made Nick and I better and better and better at A, communicating, and B, evolving into a much more substance-based project, which again is a reflection of who we are in the community that we want to cultivate and support. So I think in through those difficult conversations, and really, like, you know, honestly, it was like learning a new language. It was A, learning a new language on my side, and then trying to teach somebody that language when I was very much new at it myself. So that massive learning through that entire process, and still
Yeah. I mean, I feel like it's been a few conversations now with me and I'm like getting it more each time. but it is like, it's just a kind of a new paradigm, I guess, when we've been used to something that's so conditioned into us for so long that it's hard to grasp and understand necessarily how it can work. Because I think, you know, you just described like how Gary Vee's like almost like a ticket, like digital real estate ticket, almost like in a sense, is kind of like what it feels like to me. But like for me, looking at the NFT world very much from the outside, it's all been like art, you know, and this like collectible art type of thing. So like even that is a different way of looking at a completely new thing. And immediately I was like, wow, I wish Iron Man would use that for their ticketing process, because like you can't transfer anything, you can't defer anything, you can't get a refund on anything. And like I could imagine that as like a way for events like that, probably not them because they're, you know, just like way behind the times, but as an event sells out and all of a sudden that NFT ticket to such and such race goes up in value, you can trade it for one next year, you can sell it to somebody, you know, anything like that. I can see the functionality a lot more with something like this going forward. Because like you said, like part of the different element is that ownership piece. And so like, yeah, I own this ticket to this thing. And there's so many ways I can utilize or treat or, you know, shift or whatever with that. So yeah, it makes a lot of sense. But
yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, I would add a couple of things. I think the word NFT is what holds that weight right now. What gets me very excited about the, I guess, the future of this technology is, I think people that are in the space that really has spent a lot of time in the space understand that that word will likely not be used in the future, because like to your point earlier around ticketing, like that's just going to be the new way tickets work. And we don't talk about the technology behind the ticket or how the tickets are produced. We just talk about tickets. And if everybody adopted a new way of interacting with the world because it's a better way, then it's, you know, the NFT itself or the technology behind it is not something, you know, I think people will continue to talk about. I listened to a podcast recently about MP3s and how when MP3s came out, it was a format that all music had to kind of take on in order for it to be played in multiple different platforms. And eventually it just became the backing or behind the music. But again, it's, people don't talk about MP3s. They just talk about music, like that song, share that song or whatever. They mm-hmm. don't say, is that in an MP3 format or yeah. not? So I think that was like, wow, that's an interesting way to put it, because now we talk about, wait, is that a ticket like an NFT or is that a non-NFT?
Yeah.
Right. So I do think we will eventually get to a place where, like for us at Run As You Are, what we're doing is memberships. And now we're going to have to answer a lot of questions around, wait, is that membership an NFT? Currently, well, yes, right? But we do see a world where memberships will just be, all memberships in the future will be NFTs. And that'll just be memberships.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, the MP3 example is great too, because I remember being like, oh, I got an MP3 player. How many MP3s does that hold, right? And it's like, I don't, you know, nobody's like, oh, the new MacBook Pro has like holds X amount of MP3s, right? It just plays music.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. So yeah, it'll just become the complete standard. I mean, I'm curious, you know, just from like, as I've gotten into different things in my life, like you, and it sounds like you do, you just like got sucked into this crazy, like deep vortex of NFTs and everything around that. And was there a point where you're like, A, like, what am I doing? B, like, feel like everyone's doing this. And then when you kind of like go and talk to these brands and you're like, oh, wait, no one's doing this. They don't even understand what this is. you know, some of that I'm like, and also probably a realization that like you've kind of like accidentally become probably some kind of specialist in this space as well, just like at least knowledge wise.
Yeah. I mean, to answer your first question, absolutely. So like six months ago, for sure. I think me and Larry specifically were probably waking up every day going, what are we doing? We have no idea what we're doing because we were really in this weird silo. The like NFT or Web3 community is small, no matter how big we feel like it is becoming. It's very small, right? And I think it was very evident and became extra evident when we started talking about these brands. And you just have this like inkling in your head that every brand has to be exploring this technology, right? Especially big brands from a, you know, marketing perspective, a brand perspective, technology, community building, like they have to be at least dabbling, right? But
I think you also look at brands too as being like, they're the pioneer. You look at them thinking like, you know, Nike's making X shoe, they're the pioneer. So that 100% to Nick's point, you're like, oh, they're not thinking about it. What does that mean? Is that good or bad?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I think having those conversations, you start to question kind of like, are we like way too early? Or like, are we just on the cusp? Like we're clearly in the, like, you know, the early stages of this technology. And we recognize that, especially I would say the last year, where there has been, you know, good and bad that's come out of the space. And to your point, Ryan, about, you know, it's art. And there's really good artists making great art in NFT form. But that doesn't mean every single person should just go and launch NFTs as art. Because, there's digital artists that have been doing this for decades. And now there's a form that works for them. But what they create is beautiful, right? And I think there's always going to be a space for that. I think what everyone else saw is an opportunity, obviously, to capitalize on a hype culture. And, you know, there's people buying and flipping this stuff like crazy. But again, like, not everybody's an amazing artist. You can't just decide to, you know, make your JPEG into an NFT and it's amazing art. So then the transition from that was actually utility. It's like, okay, then we're gonna make these all utility tokens, meaning, you know, if you hold this token, you know, we might be the next Disney, right? So effectively what you're holding is the first Mickey Mouse collectible. That's what you're holding. But not everyone can be Disney either. Right? And you're also like, who's behind the projects? It was very much anonymous, and a lot of them were very young, you know, never built companies before. So you're really selling a bit of a dream. And, you know, again, like, not to say the intentions were wrong. I think a lot of people had strong, good intentions around building, you know, great projects and great brands and whatnot. But it was definitely a bit of a bandwagon feeling for sure last year. There's a lot of people jumping in the space that probably shouldn't have
been. Yeah, I think from an outside perspective, like that's kind of how I felt. It was like when it first started like coming more into like pop culture realm, I guess, I was like, oh, this is interesting. And this does make sense for certain expressions of digital art and projects. And then it just seemed like everyone was releasing an NFT, either version of what they're already doing. And I was just like, it started to seem like really like surface level and corny and like lose some of that like technology, like innovative, like interest or depth to it, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. And I think what got me into the space first was NBA Top Shots. And what they've done very well is make the experience non-Web3, because I didn't know I was buying an NFT. And this was back in early 2021, maybe even late 2020 when I started buying NBA Top Shots. And it was just a platform and you can use a credit card and you buy digital collectibles similar to cards. Anyone who bought basketball cards or hockey cards or Pokemon cards growing up understood it right away. cool. It's like there's a limit to certain ones. There's rarities. There's players that you love. There's fandom. There's a marketplace. This all makes a lot of sense. Nobody knew they were buying NFTs. So they ended up adopting a lot of users into the space. For us at Run As You Are, we're trying to do the exact same thing for the running community, mm-hmm. which is when you join the Run As You Are platform, we're building it in ways that you're just going to love it as a runner. That's the only thing we need you to do, right? There's a membership offering. Again, there's you don't need to know exactly the technology behind it because we're not going to have all those barriers for you. There's no need to download new things or buy cryptocurrency or any of that stuff, right? So we're effectively trying to do what NBA Top Shots did for kind of the collectible and basketball market for the running community world.
Yeah, and I think an important point to add on that is where NBA Top Shots got it right was really unlocking that nostalgia. And to Nick's earlier point of, you know, he used to rip the cards open with pals and now he was pulling them up on his mobile device at a bar. It's like, you know, you get to tap into that though. It's the same thing with, you know, old Jordans and stuff. There's a nostalgia aspect to that. And one big unlock for us was realizing that we were trying to take a world that was well-versed in maybe crypto and NFTs and trying to make them runners. And we were trying to take runners that were interested in this and get them to understand what it was. And realizing that we were really just like banging two rocks together that weren't going to gel. And what made so much more sense when we started to engage and lock in brands. And then when we realized, oh, wait a minute, we've got the brands, we've got the community. We've always really wanted to collaborate and create a much better indie run shop, conversation and collective sort of group. This is also an opportunity to do that. So three big user groups to this offer are running brands, run specialty dealers, and community. And then we have a whole host of ways where we can interact and have those three groups work together, which is where the super exciting part is and where it becomes very borderless. Now you can create an activation between, you know, Vancouver Running Company and Meta House in Mexico City, with Solomon, who's pulling it off in Annecy, France. So now you're not limited to the resources of an independent running shop in a particular city. Now you actually have the resources and the support of the community and the brands and the other retailers globally. Mm.
So, yeah, and I'm definitely approaching this as the rock, the runner rock that doesn't get, you know, I'm getting it more for sure. But like, yeah. So, you know, as we go into like Raya and how it actually works, like there is some integration with Strava in terms of like running and you're kind of getting, you know, logging points or something. Like I, maybe like a year and a half ago, I got in cycling and a cycling brand was like, here's the January challenge. You got to ride 500 kilometers. And if you do, you obviously complete the challenge. You get a little badge on your Strava. And you also then get like a pair of water bottles that are like special with that badge that they'll mail you, right? So like then I'm out on a bike ride by myself, you know, that logs that. Then I go on a bike ride on the weekend with like three other guys and they're all signed up for that as well. And we're like, okay, do you think they're going to send the water bottles? Like how does it work, right? And, you know, then we all end up getting the water bottles and we've all got the badges on Strava. So, you know, that's kind of a cool experience in a way. I wonder like from your guys is what, like, how are you taking that kind of to the next level with Raya with a similar type of like, there's a community engagement, there's a product from a brand that you're excited about. You're also inspiring people to move either by themselves or in community.
Yeah. I mean, I'll let Nick dive into the tech behind it. But I think an important thing is to first understand who we define as a runner. And a runner, I think one of the big barriers to the entry to becoming a runner for many people is the fact that they see this sort of elitist, you know, singlets, you know, split shorts, and you have to train for a race. But that's actually probably 5% of the population of runners. Everybody else is running for a whole host of different reasons. And so a runner as defined by us within Run As You Are is anybody that moves forward. So you might be powered by a wheelchair, you might walk, you might hike, you might run, you might be new to running, you might be a 30-year vet, it doesn't matter. And so that's one really, really important aspect, is that unlike a in-person experience where you might have a running group that has to run in order to just stay together as a group, we don't have that limitation in the digital sphere. So what's really cool is the interaction within Discord that's taking place already is very supportive for people getting into running. There's many people that say, oh, you know, I've been on Discord doing XYZ forever, gaming or what have you, and I stumbled upon Run As You Are, and I ran this weekend. Just like, oh, there it is right there. And so where that interaction comes in amongst the group is really the core of it is the community. And how can we take the digital token and engage with the community in ways that hasn't taken place before? How can we do that without the digital token? So I'll let Nick talk to the tech on this, but that's, you know, logging miles and redeeming rewards. But then how can we take that indie run shop experience that has done so well in this new school era and plug all that in together? And that's Run As You Are, the platform. But yeah, Nick can talk about utility.
Yeah, I'll add to that. I think what was core to all of this is the idea that we're trying to build this new world, right? And the output we're trying to build is this world that's, you know, rich in diversity, and we want all sorts of different people that are identifying themselves as runners from kind of all walks of life, right? That's the output. That's what we want to see. So, you know, to be able to kind of create that world, then the kind of inputs that we're putting into our platform have to speak to that, right? So we're being very intentional and thoughtful around how the platform actually works. It's very simple in design. You're basically just signing up for a platform completely free, and you're syncing your activity, your account, your Strava account, right? So it starts with Strava. We will be integrating with other activity tracking platforms as well. We will launch with Strava because Strava is probably the most used one for runners around the world. So you sync your Strava account, and all you're basically doing is going out and running, turning on your Strava, going out for running. And then effectively what's happening is you're collecting points within our platform, right? We'll call them Riot points for now. We haven't finalized a name for that, but we'll call them Riot points. Then the question is how do the points work? Is it like 1 kilometer per point? Is this like you climb a mountain, you get more points? Is this, so it's going to be phased out, right? But the idea of it, the end point that we're trying to get to is how do we gamify the experience so that the output is what we desire, right? Is it community focused, meaning is there a way we can drive more people to run together in groups in ways that's, you know, great events that are popping up, or to Rob's point around indie run shops, maybe we can drive people to attend, show up with a friend, by yourself, whatever that may be. Maybe you can unlock more points. Then there's, you know, ways that we can encourage people to explore new routes, explore new cities, run with a friend you've never run before, run with a family member, you know, encourage more people in your circle to go outside, right? And there's so many different variables that we can capture through all of these tracking devices, right? Because it's all just data, right? And if we're gamifying our experience to unlock the most amount of points for the output that we desire, which is not necessarily encouraging people to, you know, and again, I'm a physiotherapist, so I know this side of it. Like, really just go out there and kill themselves running as much as they can, because that gives you the most points, or running as fast as you can, probably way faster than you should, because it gives you more points. Let's do the opposite. Of course, we want people to get better and improve and all of those things, but we're going to weight everything a little heavier towards the community side and encouraging somebody to even go for a walk, right? You're going to get a lot of points if you go for a walk every single day compared to probably somebody who runs, 50K in a day type of thing, because that's a new input for that person. And we feel like that's ultimately what we're trying to do, is introduce more and more people to this culture, more and more people to go outside. So again, in the simple form, you're really just syncing Strava and go run, and you're going to get some points. How we're going to gamify it is to encourage inclusivity, community, and running together with people, and sharing the joy of loving, sharing the joy of running, ultimately, right? That is the free, completely free platform, right? What do you, and then with the points, what do you do with the points, right? We'll have basically a redemption kind of center. These are not final names, by the way, redemption center of some sort. And effectively, you're taking your points and you're exchanging it for things that runners would love. We're going to focus very hard with brands and our partners and retail partners to create experiential things. We really want to make it experiential focused, things that bring people in real life together. That would be the core kind of tier one and main focus. Of course, there will be the other things that runners will need and love, which is discounts and products and all the things that you would expect. But we will be leaning probably a lot heavier towards the experiential side. That's that. And then, of course, the membership offering is just all of that elevated, right? The NFT membership itself, you will be getting a digital collectible that's a one-of-one unique art piece done by Marlon. And we've been fortunate to partner with some amazing brands. We have four that's official right now, which is Adidas, On, CLE, and Satisfy. And hopefully a couple more coming up pretty quick here, but currently the four. And with those brands, we've been able to work with their teams to finalize our artwork for what we originally intended, which is the shoes and the apparel. And that will be within the artwork now. So when you go and purchase one of these membership NFTs, you will get one unique artwork NFT, fully animated artwork that has one of the brands associated with it. And this is where it gets fun. And I, a lot for kind of myself and Glary and the kind of Web3 team, really showing people what Web3 can do. Like, we really want to show brands, retailers, as well as the community, the positives of using blockchain technology. You don't have to know it's blockchain, but the way we can create token gated experiences, unlock a lot of utility, the ability to obviously transfer ownership and all of that stuff that comes along with it. That's where we can have a lot of fun. For brands to be able to engage with their biggest fans, really, in ways they've never done before, is a very kind of, for me, as like, again, a curious entrepreneur, a really exciting time. This just obviously fires me up. I'd love to see, us be a part of that kind of evolution of utilizing this technology in the correct way. Sometimes I can't even sleep at night because I get so excited.
Cool. Yeah. I think like that's great in terms of explanation of how this works and the vision. So thank you both for kind of laying that out there. I think that makes it like definitely as clear as can be at this point with what it is you're building and this kind of initial launch coming up in next month, basically.
Yeah. I think we're, it's definitely down to the wire for us. We're working incredibly hard. Our tech team is working incredibly hard. Every team is working incredibly hard. So The plan is to launch our platform in probably about 2 weeks or so, make it live for everyone. And then we would be launching our memberships pretty soon after. So like a week or so after that. So everything will be available very, very soon.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I'm excited to see it unfold, of course. And then I guess like full disclosure, I'm working with you guys on helping to, you know, on the brand side of things, visual side of things. So yeah, it's an exciting project to be a part of and learn about, you know, the technology side as well as like, of course, the community side and like, yeah, that being such a powerful thing for human beings to be involved in. And I think to kind of wrap it up, like, you know, I love the idea or exploring the idea of like identifying as a runner, you know, like I think that's such an interesting thing for everyone in a different way, right? Like I think there's certain communities that probably feel like running is not for me in a way, even though there might be runners in their circle. I remember like training for that marathon in Vancouver and being like, once I run this marathon, I'm going to be a runner, you know? But I had already ran like a bunch of halves and 10Ks and like just ran for myself like 5-6 days a week, you know? So like, obviously I was a runner. And, you know, when I got into triathlon and got a bike, quickly like the cycling just time-wise overtook the amount of time running. And so Strava was like, you're a cyclist. And it was like, oh, I guess I'm a cyclist, you know? It made it easier in a way because this like platform told me that it validated that I was a cyclist. And it's like kind of funny in that way, the way our mind works. And I think so many people that are runners and do run don't necessarily identify like as a runner. So I'm curious, you know, it feels like that in and of itself will be a huge win to just like validate people and allow them to identify as a runner and embrace that part of their identity and experience.
Yeah, the in-store team at Vancouver Running Company often comments how many people will come in and say, you know, I need a new pair of shoes. And, you know, the conversation, you know, how long you run? Oh, I run, you know, 20, 30 minutes here and there, but I'm not a runner. It's like, they always have this sort of like, I think it's almost like a way to say, it's like if somebody invites you to go play basketball with Nick, it's like, you know, Nick's a pretty good basketball player. I know I'm not as good as Nick. So I need to preface my acceptance of your invitation with, you know, I'm not that great, but I'm going to go play. I got height on my side, so I can kind of play that advantage. But that aside, I'm not very good at basketball. But I'm going to say that if somebody invites me to go play basketball, the same way people that see this image of Kipchoge breaking the world record again and singlets and short shorts and, you know, kinesiology tape and gels and all the rest of it. It's like, I just want to go like run in my sweats, you know, shake out what happened at work that day and have dinner. And, but there's this really odd need to sort of justify the fact that like, that's what type of runner you are. Rather than saying, I am a runner, I just run in this style. Or I am a runner, I just, you know, hike and run. Trail runners are a perfect example of that. I was just having a conversation with somebody yesterday, how we were on set for the shoot and one of the girls is in a completely different sport and is super interested in getting into trail running. And the other woman that was there said, I'm a trail runner, but we sort of hike run. I was like, well, you're a trail runner. You're just like, you're moving forward. You're just doing it in your own way. But I think human nature is this sort of justification of like, you know, I can do the thing. It's just like, there's a caveat. And I definitely 100% think and agree with you that Run As You Are is going to unlock that. Huge for so many people and so much of the community.
Yeah, I'll add to that. I think a lot of this goes back to my physio days. It's like full circle for me because I've spent so much time like studying gait and mechanics of how you know the gait cycle works, and it's really the same movement, right? Like walking is running, but we love to define them differently. Of course, there's a way to define running where you're actually like taking flight. There's a flight portion of it. That's the only real differentiating factor from a gait cycle perspective. But the mechanics are exactly the same, right? So when I you know, go for a walk with my mom, which I do, a few blocks, like she's like tired, right? So that is equivalent of like a pretty sizable run for somebody who takes part or engages with that much more, right? So again, like it goes back to, you know, if you're putting one foot in front of the others, and, you know, again, that's like in a literal sense, but also in a figurative sense, as long as you're pushing forward in life, I think you should be identified as a runner. Why basketball was an easy, like running was an easy transition for me from basketball, because it felt the same, right? Lifting weights did not feel the same, but running from basketball to running, it felt very similar, because, you know, it was about getting better. It was about sweating. It was about moving my feet. It was about, you know, granted, when I was like started training for marathons, I didn't want to play basketball, as I didn't want to twist my ankle ever, because it is quite a different sport. But again, as long as you're a forward mover in life, I think you're going to identify yourself as a runner. It doesn't matter if you're slow or fast, or you walk or you run or you hike or you do trails. Really any of that stuff, to me, it's a form of running, and you belong in our community.
Yeah. I guess what strikes me is it's not a technical thing. It's not even hardly a physical thing, because pretty much everyone is moving forward in some way, right? Whether it's to like go to their car or to go on a 10K or whatever it is. So it's really more of a mindset thing. And I feel like that's where, you know, there's so much positive room to gain and empower people, really, I guess, is by, you know, just allowing them to be a runner, you know, giving them permission to allow themselves to be a runner, you know, in quotes. And with that sort of like self-belief, it just opens up, you know, the doors to almost anything.
Yeah, it's true. I think that sort of permission to call yourself a runner is a good point. Yeah. It's like anything, when you're surrounded by like-minded people, it gives you permission to be who you are, really. And run as you are. That's probably one of the things I'm most excited about, is really like that global, not from us saying that global acceptance of you as a runner, but hopefully the participant in the community feeling like, okay, I am a runner, and I can stop saying I'm not a runner when I go buy new shoes, because look at all these other people that are like near, or look at all these other people in different positions. But yeah, that sort of permission to say, it's okay to hike, run. It's okay to walk. It's okay to, like, that's what it is.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. Well, I'm super excited to, you know, be a part of this and see it roll out in the coming weeks and months. So yeah, thank you both for coming on and sharing, you know, your journey to this point and the vision moving forward. If you have anything else you want to share on this project, or, you know, any like links or URLs that you want to point people towards, like feel free to drop that in now. But otherwise, yeah, really excited to see this.
Yeah, we for in-person experiences, if you're in and around the Vancouver area, we'll have a pop-up opening soon. Which will be loaded with runs, and just connecting with people and talking about the project. And then over the next few months, there's a chance you'll see us in the Southern US activating, and then quite possibly Mexico. So if you're in those areas as well, and the best way to stay up is Run As You Are on Instagram and runasyouare.io. You can sign up for notifications when the platform launches and stay up to date that way.
Yeah, perfect. All right. Well, thank you guys again.
Thanks for having us. Yeah. Thanks, Ryan.
Thanks, Ryan.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. Whether you listen to it on Spotify, Apple, or through our website, it would be great to hear your feedback and thoughts. If you're able to leave a review, it'll really help us share the message and share the podcast with more people. Thank you.